Welcome to the Future Thinkers Podcast. I'm Mike Gilliland.
And I'm Yuvia Ivanova. And this podcast is all about the future.
Hello again. This is episode number 13. And this one is all about us and them psychology, also known as the basis of all racism.
Right. So first, I want to talk about why we chose this topic in the first place, as opposed to something a little more futuristic like flying cars or brain uploading. The reason why we want to talk about this is because as technology evolves, a lot of things in our lives become easier. But the thing that doesn't change unless we put conscious effort into it is ourselves as humans. And our brains, a lot of scientists say, are still the same as they were 10,000 years ago. So we're at a point in our evolution where in order to progress further as human beings, we have to make a conscious effort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still running on outdated software. We're running on Windows 3.1. I don't even know if that was an operating system. 3.1, 3.5, 7. Let's just say 7. That's old enough.
You know, a lot of the time when people wrote science fiction, say in the 50s or 60s, they imagined 2014 to be a year where we have robots everywhere and flying cars and where we talk to each other telepathically. And although we do have amazing computers in our pocket that used to take up the whole room, which is, you know, our smartphones, we have automated a lot of things in our lives and in our industries, but it feels like life is still kind of the same. And that's because we as humans haven't changed very much.
Mm-hmm. We're still apes swinging in the jungle, beating our chests and showing status to the rest of the group.
Look at my iPhone 6 Plus!
So you've got a background in psychology, and you've got a bit of an insight into this that I think most people don't have. So why don't you start off talking about what us and them psychology is all about?
Right. So in psychology, it's called the in-group, out-group mentality. And what this is that we favor people of our own group. We're more willing to help them. We're more willing to understand them, see them as well-rounded human beings, see them as good and well-meaning. And we see the people of the out-group or the people we perceive to be as the out-group as dangerous, dishonest, dumb. And we also tend to see them as more homogenous. So we see them kind of as all the same. And the reason why this is, there's actually an evolutionary reason to this, is that we evolved in very small groups as humans, about 150 people or less, small tribes. And because the resources were scarce and we had to work for our resources, nothing was automated at this time. So we kind of had to hoard things. And this kind of mentality of favoring our own group helped us because we were more likely to keep resources in our own group, and therefore that group would survive and pass on their genes. Whereas if we blocked out people of the other group, then our group would get more resources.
Mm-hmm. So things are different now because we have globally distributed information. We can get resources to and from different locations quite quickly, quite easily, minimal energy and expense required. The idea that we need to be separated by borders in smaller groups just doesn't apply anymore. So we're still kind of running on that system and that thought process of our tiny little groups and our tiny little borders. So why do you think we continue to do that today, and how can we change it?
Well, I think our brains are just wired a certain way because if you look at human evolution, the time scale on the x-axis is very, very long. So we were living in very similar conditions for a long time, for thousands and thousands of years. Children and their parents had more or less the same lives. And now, in the last 100 years especially, things are started changing exponentially. We're in the hockey stick. So our parents' lives were very different than our own lives. And our children's lives will be even more different than our own lives. And now it's not just the generations, it's the sub-generations. You know, people who were born 5 years apart, even their lives might be drastically different. For example, people who were born before internet was in every home, and then people who were born after that, their mentality is going to be very different. We have to consciously direct our own evolution now. And so all these cognitive biases that we have that are left over from, you know, the thousands of years of evolution, we have to be aware of them and we have to try to change them. And why this matters is because now we're living in a very interconnected world, very mixed world, where our groups are not so geographically defined. For example, you might be a member of a certain subreddit, or you might be a gamer and you play online with your buddies who are all over the world and are of different ages and different socioeconomic backgrounds and different ethnic origins. And groups are not so clearly defined anymore, and they're very distributed.
Mm-hmm. If you think about it, how many tables have we sat at just in the last 2 years where not a single person at the table shared nationality or background with anybody else at the table?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. This is another bias that we have, is that we tend to gravitate towards people who have the same biases. And that's because we don't want to be wrong. We want to be accepted and we want others to agree with us. So we tend to seek out people who have the same views of the world and therefore are the same biases. So we perpetuate our own biases, which is really funny. Mm-hmm. For example, in our little group of entrepreneurs, people kind of think of jobbers as this like derogatory term. Why don't they just start their own business? And it's so funny because it just seems like such an arbitrary distinction, and they really see it as a, you know, as an inferior thing. I think that no matter how much we try to see ourselves as unbiased and reasonable, open-minded people, our brains just aren't wired that way. So we have to consciously change that and create new habits.
So let's talk about the out-group effect, where you tend to view any external groups as simpler, less diverse, more prone to problems, or more prone to certain types of behavior just because they're members of that group. So why is it that people view their own group as this diverse and intelligent mixture of people, and anything outside of it is just this homogenous, milky blend of people?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I can't think specifically of any scientific findings to do with this, but my assumption would be that it's because we automatically discount outsiders as somebody we don't need to associate with. And people of our in-group, it's beneficial to us to know everything that's happening in their lives. That's why gossip exists, is because we have this predisposition to want to know things about people of our own group or people who we perceive to be in our own group. So, for example, you know, if somebody is sick in your group, you want to avoid them because you don't want to get their illness. So you want to know when somebody's sick. Or if somebody just got married, you would want to know that information because it can help you navigate the social structure of the group better. It's funny how we're operating with these caveman brains in a technologically advanced society, and there's just so many ways that it doesn't fit.
Mm-hmm. I think one thing we are realizing now is that geography plays less and less of a role, although we're still separated by governments and borders. And where do we see that going in the future?
Yeah. So Peter Diamandis wrote this article recently, and I'll link to it in the show notes. And he talks about how people's nationalities and borders and your passport is defining you less and less, and how in the future it's very possible that we won't have these distinctions or they won't be as meaningful as they are now. For example, right now we've noticed this traveling that people from certain countries or certain passports are favored more. You can get visas easily, or you can enter countries without visas at all. And people from other countries, for example, Vietnam, it's very difficult for them to travel because they're discriminated against with that passport. So they need a visa to go everywhere. They need an extra background check to go everywhere. So it's strange that these things still define us. So I think in the future, we're going to have to adapt. We're going to have to overcome these biases. We're going to have to learn to not discriminate against people based on certain characteristics that actually have nothing to do with their competency or incompetency in a certain field.
Yeah, an interesting thing that happened recently is Estonia is offering a digital citizenship to people who don't live in the country. You can open a company very quickly, a bank account. That could be a really interesting way that we start to surpass government regulation and borders and start having assets and citizenships all over the world, that countries that would allow us to do this would attract more entrepreneurs, more innovation, more foreign money. I think it would be a win-win for most countries to eventually adopt this.
Yeah, also I'm interested in non-country-based passports, sort of a sovereign passport. That would be really cool. It could be a distributed governing body, like a non-governmental organization that can screen people and give out this passport mm-hmm. that would be valid for international travel, almost like a diplomatic passport, because you wouldn't belong to any country, so it wouldn't be assumed that you have biased interests.
You could imagine a lot of Americans giving up their passports if that kind of thing existed. Don't have to pay taxes while you're traveling abroad. You don't have to pay a ton of money to get rid of your citizenship or transfer a citizenship, as Americans currently have to do.
Yeah, we have a lot of American friends, and it seems that it's very difficult if they do want to give up their citizenship. They have to give a very large portion of their assets, and make it very easy.
Yeah, there's even this dramatic display that has to happen where they shed your passport in front of you. They make you watch it.
You have to go through a psych evaluation, actually, to give up your American citizenship. They're like, are you sure? Are you sane? Why are you giving up your citizenship?
How could you possibly not want to live in the U.S.? So maybe we should talk about examples of us and them think, because it's easy to just assume it's only about racism. But it doesn't just exist in that. It's also, I think, the basis of inequality with genders, with sexual preferences. It's the reason that gay marriage has not been legal for so many years, and that gay couples have had to fight for their rights just to have the same level of equality with straight couples. Arguments online between religious people and atheists. It's easy as an atheist to say that you believe in science and you don't believe in like the spaghetti monster in the sky, and looking at all of religious people as the same, as this blanket, unintelligent group that believes in a fairy tale, but you're doing the exact same thing, which is to oversimplify. Mm-hmm. I think something we forget when we quickly group people together is that everybody is an individual. If, you know, say if you're traveling and you get into a taxi cab and you get ripped off by that cab driver, it doesn't mean every single cab driver in that city or the continent is like that, you know? So I see that a lot while we're traveling. We see a lot of expats and other travelers just make these really loose and blanket assumptions about the countries they're visiting, thinking that like, oh, people are the same because they had one experience with one person. It's just simply not the case.
And the other way around, I think there's been a lot of focus on white people being racist, but actually everybody is racist. They've done studies on this where people in Western countries have been educated not to ever show racism, but the study shows implicit association. They can tell whether you associate certain cultures or certain groups with bad or good qualities. And actually, everybody has their own biases, and they're not all the same. So some people might be more or less biased by race or by sexual orientation or by age or body shape. So there's many, many different ways to discriminate against others, but everybody discriminates. And so I think the first thing we have to do is just accept that we all have these biases. It's natural for us to want to categorize things, because that's how we learn, and that's how we learn new concepts. Because if every situation in our life was unique, then we wouldn't be able to make any kind of predictions or make quick decisions at all, because we would have to try to take in all the information that exists about the situation. But these stereotypes or these categorizations actually help us make decisions quickly. It's just that we have to be aware when we're doing it, when it doesn't apply.
I think we need to be aware of the negative effects of that kind of categorization. So how does it hurt you to overcategorize a group of people? What do you miss out on when you do that?
Yeah, and that's kind of what we talked about before, that we are living in an increasingly interconnected world. So we can't just stay in our village and ignore all outsiders. We have to interact with them. We have to live with all kinds of different people around us. And it hurts us because we're limiting ourselves from opportunities that could arise.
You lose opportunities to learn. I mean, that I can only speak for myself, but that's one of the biggest drivers, motivating things in my life, is to find opportunities to learn. So when I realize that I'm stereotyping a group of people or stereotyping a single person, if I realize that, then I also realize that I'm losing out on opportunities to learn from that person, because I'm making a lot of assumptions that just maybe are not true. I think the way we label ourselves plays a role in this as well. When you call yourself an entrepreneur or Russian or Caucasian, how do you think that that limits you and your scope of your own personality and intelligence? How does that put you in a box and you're doing it to yourself?
Yeah, well, it's the same. You know, you're limiting your opportunities because you feel like something might not fit your character, but if you think outside the box, it might give you a really amazing experience that will contribute to your life later. Okay, so why don't we talk about overcoming biases? Because now that we understand that it's a problem and everybody has this problem, it's nothing to point a finger at to say, oh, you're racist, you're a homophobe, you're this, you're that. It's just a matter of wanting to improve ourselves and actually doing it. They've done a bunch of studies, and I'll link to some of them in the show notes, which will be at futurethinkers.org/episode13. And in these studies, they've tried different ways to reduce people's bias, specifically in terms of race. This is a big problem in the workplace. It's becoming more and more of a diverse culture, but it's not represented very well in the workplace. So, for example, big companies like Twitter, Facebook, Google are still predominantly white male. And so a lot of companies try to employ these sort of diversification tactics or quotas, and that sometimes ends up backfiring. I was reading this one article where they talked about how sometimes when companies have this type of quota, the other workers at the company can perceive the people of color or women as weaker and not able to get to that position themselves, like they needed assistance. And so they discriminate against them anyway. They see it as like, oh, without this initiative, you wouldn't have gotten this job, so you must be not as good as me. And then people end up forming their little cliques inside the company where those people end up being ostracized anyway. Mm-hmm. The differential treatment of groups, whether it's helping them or discriminating against them, either way, it hurts in the end. Mm-hmm. And so this is something that they found in the study, that when you try to artificially help a certain group of people, like by having diversification rules in your workplace, it actually hurts that group of people, and it hurts everyone. Mm-hmm. This is something I think that is really important as a takeaway from this, is that it's not just treating groups badly, it's also treating groups disproportionately well. So there's another article that I was reading today that talked about this specifically, the favoritism of the in-group, favoriting people who are either of your ethnic background or from your family or people who you perceive to be on the same team. They've done studies about that too. Just randomly dividing a group of participants into two and then saying, oh, you're team A, you're team B. And then they were asked to rate different people of either the same team or the other team on how smart they are, how attractive they are, etc. And people consistently rated members of their own group more positively, even though they were just randomly divided 5 minutes ago. It's crazy how this works. But either way, we have to be aware of these things and just learn to not do it. To catch ourselves doing it and to, I think, consider everybody's individual circumstance instead of making a blanket judgment, either positive or negative.
Mm-hmm. You've heard of the Venus Project, right?
Yeah.
So the Venus Project is an idea of new world governance, in that we start operating on an economic system based on resources. In a resource-based economy, most or all of our decisions are based on what resources we have available to us. But this type of economy requires that everybody in the world works together.
I like the idea of the Venus Project. I think it's very positive. But again, I'm not really sure how that will work in reality, considering that we still have greed and jealousy and biases. And I think we have to eradicate those things first before we can move on to a utopian system like that.
Mm-hmm. If we're going to transition into a world of abundance, I think we do need to take into account the resources hoarded in different areas of the globe, and we need to eradicate the idea of us and them and start thinking of us and us. It's just all of us. So getting out of groupthink and getting out of hoarding of resources is, in my mind, one of the bigger hurdles that we have to get through.
Yeah, one of my favorite books is Abundance by Peter Diamandis, and I think we've mentioned it before in the podcast. And what he talks about is that right now we're living in a more abundant world than we ever have. Per capita, we have the fewest people ever in the history of mankind dying from war and from disease and from murders and any kind of foul play. And life expectancy is at an all-time high. Resource production is at an all-time high. Child mortality is at an all-time low, and health and longevity at an all-time high as well. And yet people still think like the world is ending. And they talk about, oh, the world is going to shit and global warming and all these things. But the reason why people still think this way, even though we live much better lives than our ancestors did, is because our brains are wired the same way. We're still wired to look for things that could potentially kill us or hurt us. And we react to those things more strongly than to things that are consistently positive.
Which actually brings me to a couple of very simple solutions. Those would be figuring out ways to control your mind, to control your fears, and whether that be through meditation or consuming of psychedelics or taking time to think abundantly, to think positively, and to affirm to yourself that everything's going to be okay. But I don't really see a lot of other solutions other than taking care of yourself, taking care of your mind. That's really the only way that you can overcome fears.
I agree with you, absolutely. And I find that meditation is a particularly good way to do this. But also for those who are non-meditators, imagining a person of the race that you think is inferior doing something really good and feeling the feelings in of that situation, of them doing something really good to you.
But we're still operating on this assumption in this conversation that it's just racism. But I don't think racism is the issue. And I think that's kind of the problem that motivated me to want to talk about this topic to begin with, is that people look at groups of people and think, no, I'm not racist. I'm not homophobic. I just hate this group of people. The attitude is the exact same thing. The criteria for hating that people is the only thing that's really changed. I think we focus unnecessarily a lot of attention on racism and homophobia. A hot topic, discussions that are happening right now, go on Twitter, you can see it right now, I think are misidentified. The problem, the true problem, is really misidentified. It's that one group is identifying as A and saying everyone outside of this group is B, whatever kind of differences or whatever reasons that they have to hate the other one become way easier to follow through with. If you just believe you're this group and everyone else is in this group, it just becomes easy to hate and discriminate against other people.
It's not so much the isms that are the problem. It's the whole idea of groupthink in the first place, because it doesn't matter if the associations are positive or negative. It's just that we see this group as separate from ourselves. So, yeah, I have a different solution then. And it is to ask yourself, what is this person's story? Because then it becomes very clear that that person's story is individual, and the things that have shaped their lives might be culturally influenced, location influenced, but ultimately they are unique.
Mm-hmm. And you have to imagine that if you were in their same position, you had the same upbringing, the same genetics, the same life experience, you would have to be the same person and do the same thing. So someone's background creates who that person is. So if you've gone through the same thing, you would do the same thing. I think we have to imagine that people aren't making decisions or doing things that you don't like because they're stupid or inferior or think it's really about their story, their background, their upbringing. What has caused them to behave in the way that they are behaving? And I think it's important to think of them as an individual, not just quickly associate them with a group of people based off of a just very generic set of criteria. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, darker skin. Oh, turban. Oh, female. You know, it's just so easy to do that and then just assume everyone's the same. That's really the problem.
Yeah. And sometimes I think it can be really difficult to put ourselves in other people's shoes. For example, here in Thailand or in Vietnam, we've encountered a lot of taxi drivers who cannot read maps and don't know north, south, east, west. They just get completely lost, and you might tell them where you're going and point it out on the map several times, but they just have no idea, and they don't want to lose face, so they'll never tell you that they don't actually understand the map, but they end up taking you to the wrong place, and it's very frustrating, and you waste time and money. So for me, it can sometimes be hard to put myself in those shoes, because why don't you just learn how to read a map? But, you know, I've read maps since I was a little kid, and I remember my dad teaching me when I was very little where north, south, east, west is. You know, the sun rises in the east, always. But I actually asked Thai people why so many Thais can't read maps, and they say that it's just, it wasn't emphasized when they were in school. It wasn't considered a very useful skill, because the way that they tell directions is more from first person's perspective. Like, you walk down the street for 5 minutes, then you see a red building on your left, then you turn right, then you turn on the second street to the right, etc. So it's more just like first person perspective rather than top down view like the map.
I think it's interesting how people of any level of intelligence can also have the same biases about people below their level of intelligence. You would think the more intelligent, the more quote-unquote enlightened you become, the more these kind of biases start revealing themselves to be what they are, where you realize, oh, that's just an urge I have inside to feel this way about this group, this skin color or whatever. But people with a high level of intelligence will still look at people with less intelligence and think, ah, they're just stupid. How dare they not try and better themselves? How dare they not put effort into themselves to learn or educate themselves? And again, I think you have to go back to think like we're all spending a certain amount of time on this earth and we're spending our attention in different ways. So if you're an intelligent person and you look at people who are less intelligent and you just can't imagine how they could be that way, just remember that they're spending their time on different things and they might have hidden talents that you're not even aware of. They might have different things that they care about, different values that cause them not to care about the same things you do. So it doesn't mean they're stupid or it doesn't mean they're ignorant. It just means their time has been spent in different ways. And in the end, we're all going to die. So really, what is the value of dedicating your life first to intelligence rather than to happiness?
Yeah, actually, that's another thing. Intelligence is a human-invented concept, and the IQ, the intelligence quotient, was invented in the 20th century. And actually, when they originally devised the test, women performed a lot better on it than men. And then the scientist who invented it had to change it because, well, how can women be smarter than men? That's just not true. And then the test got changed so that, on average, men would perform slightly better than women. And later in the 20th century, they administered this test to people of different ethnic backgrounds, and they found that white people performed better than some other people, and then Asian people performed even better than white people. But if you think about it, it's still a human-devised measure of whatever, because it only measures specific things like math and logic and abstract thinking. But in other cultures, those things might be less valued. I might be really good at getting around in the city where things are kind of more linear and I can look at a map, look north, south, whatever. But if I were in the jungle without a map, without GPS, I would probably get lost. But a person who grew up in the jungle would be able to track themselves very easily because they use a different method, a different way of thinking. So they might think that they're really intelligent, that, you know, spatial orientation, and I'm really stupid.
Yeah, how does the city girl not know how to navigate in the jungle? What an idiot. Not only that, the benefit of just sitting still for long periods of time, perhaps you could call it meditating or clearing your thoughts or just having a blank mind. But the benefits of that would be eliminating your various neuroses or fears or worries. That's something you can easily say that we in the Western world have a real problem with. You can define people by whatever measure you create, intelligence or ability to navigate or whatever, but we need to think about happiness and peacefulness as a measurable and think, okay, you might be intelligent, but are you happy or are you at peace in your life? So maybe some people from other cultures have it right. Maybe we in the Western world don't have it right. Or maybe there's just other things that we can teach each other, you know. Maybe there's opportunities for us to learn from other cultures that aren't as technologically advanced, but have other skills that we could benefit from.
Yeah, and on this positive note, let's conclude this episode. And if you guys enjoyed it, please let us know in the comments at futurethinkers.org/episode13, or you can leave us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you want to hear more episodes from us, then please subscribe and we'll talk to you soon.
And if you guys want to check out the show notes, I highly recommend it for this episode. There's a lot of additional information included. We're going to include studies about in and out group psychology.
Different ways that scientists have tried to eliminate biases in groups of people and which methods worked and which methods didn't work.
We're going to include some talks by OKCupid's Christian Rutter talking about data and how he's seen through data of OKCupid different behaviors in regards to race and culture and how it affects the way we perceive each other and choose to find mates. Tons of stuff. And also, I've written a Medium article about this topic. UV co-wrote and edited with me, so you should definitely check that out. And links to everything will be in the show notes at futurethinkers.org/episode13.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch you guys next time. Catch you on the flip side.